You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right, McFarlane, everybody. McFarlane Energy, thanks for sponsoring us because all roads lead to this one moment. This one moment where we get to have Dustin Pedroia on the podcast. Yeah, let's go.
Yes.
Let's go.
Thanks for having me. It's been a long time.
Oh, it's been a long time. And let me tell you, it's like when we did this new version, you've been on different versions of this podcast, Pedroia, right? When we basically were doing it with a tin can. We were doing it with, I don't know what, but this version is the best version. And this version is driven by this guy, Coop. And when we started it, this guy, Dustin, said, there's only one thing I want to do in life. And that is do a podcast with Dustin Pedroia. And I said, you are so, so skewed. I mean, what is wrong with you?
Ready? I mean, this is going to maybe sound like very bad. But the reason why I love baseball and I love the Red Sox is because I grew up watching you.
Nice.
I am like everything I did in baseball, like I emulated you in literally like my mom hated it because like I had the mentality of like if I didn't get dirty that game, why show up?
That's good. Well, I'm glad I made an impression on a couple.
Thank you for that.
Yeah. Well, the reason I got into journalism was because of Dustin Pedroia. Is that right? I mean, Dustin, Coop can't, he's so young, he can't like fathom. Like he sees that Dustin Pedroia now, but still, like I know that I was probably what like 6 years old when you came into the league, and I was walking the clubhouse, and I could honestly say this since it's the Dustin Pedroia appreciation hour or half hour, whatever it is, that I can say that like there is never going to be anything like covering Pedroia. There's never going to be anything like it. There's not. I said that many times, Dustin. Not just because you're on the podcast right now, but that dynamic of you and the guy that we're going to talk about, David Ortiz, you know, the guy who's on Twitter now, who's losing his mind, Jonathan Papelbon, right? Like all of it. It's a different time, man.
Yeah, I think that's a big thing too. It's a different time. You know, now they got all the social media stuff, and shoot, I'm pretty sure if the stuff that I said when I first came up, if that was on, you know, TikTok or Snapchat or whatever the hell these things are called. If that was on there, I'd probably be in jail. But, you know, it was definitely fun. I think guys are guarded to show their personality a little bit because they're afraid of, you know, what could happen. You know what I mean? And everybody always has an opinion. And, you know, that part kind of stinks.
Yeah. You used to walk in the locker room and it was like from the get-go, boom, there it is. You know, putting like the youngest reporter on their heels, yelling across the locker, whatever it is. And you think about it, what it's like now, it like that just doesn't happen. You know why? Because people will immediately run in the hallway to tweet, oh, you look at what Pedroia is doing in the clubhouse, right?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. And you changed, man. Like you changed, right?
You kind of have to. I mean, towards the end of my career there, I mean, I was obviously hurt. So, but you know, it changes, man. You can't, you know, you kind of have to be guarded. And, you know, when you have certain personalities that, I mean, I'm an open book, you know, what you see is what you get. And, you know, I think that's what made me, you know, and everybody saw that, you know, I'll be the first one to do anything for anybody. You know, I like to joke around. I like to get on people and have fun, but you know, there comes a point where, it, you know, if it's worth it, if someone takes it the wrong way, you know, it's really not, you know, there's people around that you don't necessarily know, you know, obviously your teammates, I could joke with them and say whatever I want, you know, but there's always people around that you don't know personally. So they don't know how, you know, you could be. So, you know, you're just guarded a little bit. And I think that's tough.
Well, I mean, there's plenty of times where like we'd be yelling at each other across the clubhouse, right?
Oh, yeah.
Somebody'd be like, oh man, what's going on? Are you all right? Like,
yeah.
No, dude, like that's what made it fun. And like you said, that clubhouse and the guy that we're going to talk about, going in the Hall of Fame, David Ortiz. I mean, he was part of it. He had his locker down the end. And it was like, you know, well, I retract that, Dustin. He had his five lockers down the end. Right. And it was like, okay, he was sort of overseeing everything, you know, with a big voice in the clubhouse and everything else like that. So let's start there. Since this is like the David Ortiz, and you're going to Cooperstown, right? You're going to Cooperstown? Okay, let's go. You stay in Coop's. Coop got like a 12-person Airbnb if you want to stay there. You all
Rob,
set?
Rob has been inviting everyone. I don't know what the guest list is right now, so it's going to be difficult to get in. But
no, we got a place. We're going to be good.
You sure?
Yeah, we're good.
There's a bunk bed with your name written all over.
Rob's making pancakes.
Yeah, I'm making pancakes. All right, so David is going to the Hall of Fame, but go back to that dynamic, like where in the locker room and his presence there. And if you want, you can throw in a good story because we always love good stories. But you had the locker sort of the side. Did you have two lockers eventually, right?
No. Jesus, Rob. Do I look like the type of guy that took two lockers?
Oh, absolutely.
No.
No?
No, I always had one. Okay. Our locker room's not very big. So
listen, I mean, without naming names, there's some guys that had two lockers.
I didn't need two lockers.
Oh, you didn't need two lockers? No. All right. You had the picture right next on the post there of you with President Obama, correct?
Yep, two world leaders. Yeah.
All right. And so it was well represented at your little corner, but it was on the side. But down the end, David had like, it's probably like at the end by add three lockers.
Yeah, so, he had some space.
Yeah, he had some space. So talk a little bit about that dynamic, about what like Ortiz was like in that, you know, like sort of that clubhouse dynamic.
Well, honestly, for me, it was easy. I mean, you always, you know, there's certain guys on your team that you don't have to worry about. And worry about meaning showing up ready to win a game. And David was obviously one of them. So I never had to, you know, to worry about him. You know, obviously when he came in, you know, he's a big presence, you know, physically, you know, he's loud, his personality. But I think the reason why me and David were so great together is because we were both positive. If times are tough, and especially in that environment, you know, it's not helpful to sit back and say, oh, you know, it's the end of the world. You know, our mindset was we're going to try to find a way to get out of it. And I think that's where we were always on the same page. You know, it didn't matter if, you know, we were winning or losing or, you know, whatnot. If something was going on, you know, it was the same thing every day. You show up getting ready to win. Now he had a lot more fun than I did. You know, he was a lot, you know, the music was always playing. You know, me, I was always, you know, I had a lot to do. I had to play defense and offense and, you know, worry about positioning and all kinds of stuff to where, you know, David can roam around a little bit, motivate guys, you know, worry about hitting. He's, you know, he'll have his at bat and he'll go in and work, watch video, you know, then try to chill a little bit, relax. He had his own routine, but you know, it's definitely larger than life in the clubhouse.
So when you go back, let's go back in time, the McDonald's eating little Dustin Pedroia, 2016, right? You get in there and you remember when you were sort of introduced to David. I know in spring training, you probably come across him or whatever, but when you sort of get in there and does he say, hey, like, does he give you shit right away? Or does he embrace you right away? What was that dynamic like?
No, he embraced me right away. I mean, there was, you know, and I think, you know, when I got called up in 2006, it was a tough time. We just got swept five games by the Yankees. So I walked in Anaheim and it was like a morgue. You know what I mean? It was not a good environment. And, you know, I didn't play that much in spring training that year because I hurt my shoulder. So it was like I was walking into a new thing. But David never, you know, gave me crap or you know, he made me feel welcome. You know, and you know, that was basically it. The next year is where, you know, when I won the job in spring training, the next year was more of a, of, you know, getting to know him more. You know, that, that first year was more like a September call up kind of thing.
Well, when you're having your struggles that first month,
yeah,
what was it, what was he like then?
He treated me the same as the year I won the MVP. You know, it was, you know, and I think, and I learned from that, because I wasn't one to get on young guys, or, you know, they put Mookie's locker next to me, they put Bogey's locker close to me, you know, because I didn't want the young guys to be uncomfortable. It's already uncomfortable enough coming into Boston and trying to play in that environment as a young kid. And I understood that. So, you know, I learned from David you know, he made me feel right at home. You know, that first month I was struggling, you know, we were winning. So it wasn't like a big, yeah, I was struggling. The media was looking to get on somebody because we were winning. You know, that's why it was glaring that I was hitting 150, because I was the only guy on the team that wasn't hitting. You know what I mean? Because yeah, we were in first place by, you know, 9-10 games. So, yeah, you know, in that environment, you're always looking for something, you know. So, you know, I was just the one that wasn't hitting at the time, but I didn't make an error. You know what I mean? My defense was, you know.
Oh, believe me, Coop knows. He's documented.
Yeah. I mean, there wasn't a second baseman. I mean, I think Alex Cora would say this. I mean, I turned every double play. I changed the game defensively that first month, and that's what kept me there. Until I got going. But, you know, David was like, hey, stick to the process, man. Keep playing defense. It's not like at that time they needed me to hit third. You know what I mean? We had Manny, David, Mike Lowell, Uke. I mean, we were the best team in baseball. You know, my job at that time was to play defense and get acclimated to the big leagues. And when I got acclimated and I turned myself into a leadoff hitter and table setter, it made us that much better. And, you know, but David never got on me. He was always great with the young guys. He wanted everyone to feel a part of what we're trying to do. And, you know, you appreciate that.
When did you kind of remember the vibe of how you can talk crap to him? So in other words, like, you have the big pun thing, right? Like, whatever. I mean, this, the nickname that you came, another great nickname, another great accomplishment by Dustin Pedroia, big pun, right?
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Well, you got to understand. So we, in 2007, you know, we win it all. The next year, David went through, you know, he had obviously a great year again, but he went through some injuries. I think it was 2008. 2008 was, he hurt his wrist.
Yeah.
And so that was, I think our relationship got better because, or not got better. It went to the next level because we ended up trading Manny. David was hurt that year. You know, for a lot of it, that wrist thing that messed him up. You know, that was a tough thing for obviously a power hitter, any hitter, to go through
right. That
type of wrist thing. We just traded for Jason Bay. I remember me and Uke were on fire. I mean, it was Mikey Lowell just tore his hip. You know, it was I was playing as hard as I could every night to try to overcome the fact that all the guys that I look up to were hurt. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And we needed it. You know, I think Beckett got hurt. Lester, you know, pulled his oblique there for a little bit. You know, we had a lot of injuries, man. We were on fumes, and a lot of veteran guys were playing. Cora was playing a lot. Mark Kotze, Sean Casey. You know, so we were kind of waiting on David to come back, and I think he saw the way I was playing and he respected me a lot, and it pushed him to get back and play harder. And then the next season, you know, he started out, that was the year he started out really slow. It was, 2009, if I'm right.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. 2009. And it was, when I mean slow, I don't think he hit a home run until June.
No, and he couldn't hit lefties at all.
Yeah, so yeah. I knew. So everybody there, when something's going wrong, it's the biggest problem in the world. And, you know, he's in the cage and he's working, and I could tell he's stressed. He's not the same, you know, personality-wise and everything. And I remember one day, you know, he's in there swinging and swinging and swinging, and he asked me, what do you see? And I said, David, you know, I'm a lot younger than David. So I said, David, you're coming off an injury, man. There's nothing wrong with you. You know, it takes time. Like it, you know, I wish my younger me would have told my older me what I'm saying to David as a, you know, 24-year-old kid about my knee, but he was hurt. And I said, it takes time. Once that wrist heals up, I said, you're going to be fine. I said, don't panic, you know? And his thing was, oh, well, they're talking about releasing me and all this. And I'm like, David, if they release you, you just go over to the Yankees and you'll be hitting 60 home runs against us. Like,
that would have killed me. That would have killed me.
Yeah. It would have been the dumbest move in the history of, you know what I mean? Of baseball. So I said, listen, man, get over your injury, take each at bat and try to find a way to win it. That's it right now. And then once you get healthy, you'll be you. And the way he came back and finished that year, I think he honestly ended up hitting 230 with 30 home runs. And I think he had 99 RBIs or 100 RBIs or something. So for him to grind and do that while he was hurt, that respect level was more than, you know, the years where he hit 330 with 45 home runs. Because anybody can go out there when they're feeling good, man. Like that's the fun part. But when you're hurt and you're showing up to work and mentally you gotta find a way to help your team win, especially when he's our middle of the order guy, you know, that's impressive. And that's what shows what kind of teammate he is. Not only the player, yeah, he's a Hall of Fame player, but winner, teammate, those are the things that he brought that you don't see with that caliber of talent and player.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
When did you have that sort of, hey, I got your back, don't worry about it, mentality, that part of the relationship? When did it become sort of like, hey, you know what, we can goof on each other even more? You know, we're the two guys. We're the straws that start Coop earmuffs. We're the two straws that stir the drink when it comes to this team.
I mean, we didn't have to tell each other that. We knew. I mean, we're trying to win. You know what I mean? I mean, David, you know, for all the jewelry and the cars and everything that he has, you know what's most important to him? Winning. And I knew that. Like so that's why I could get on him, make fun of him, and you know, he shows up with his crazy outfits. But I knew that once he took those outfits off, he's got one thing on his mind, and that's winning a baseball game. He didn't matter what he did, he's trying to help us win. That's the goal in that environment. Like we're not here to kiss babies and take pictures. You know, we're here to win. And shoot, we did that.
Cool.
Do you think that, I mean, you look at David, he got the taste of it in 2004 and then 2007. Is getting that championship more of a driver? And you got it when you were super young in the league. Is it just like once you get that taste of a championship, does it just drive you even more to just get back to the pinnacle?
Yeah. I mean, you got to realize it's hard. You know what I mean? And I knew that when I was my first year, because, you know, we were down 3-1 to the Indians and it was a fight, man. Like that I knew we were really good, but so were the Indians, man. Their pitching was really good.
And you had Sabathia coming up.
I was about to say, that's almost prime CC.
Yeah. And mentally, that was a grind. You know, we had to try to find a way to win that game 5 and get back home. And that's when Carmona was throwing 100-mile-an-hour sinkers. I mean, they were good. Their bullpen was good. I mean, the thing they had Rafael Betancourt, which all their it was funny. All their relievers they were elite. Me and Uke matched up great against them. So they would bring in Betancourt, who throws high fastballs. Me and Uke can hit a high fastball. You know, Jensen Lewis had a good changeup and it faded in to me and Uke. It matched up well with our swings. So I just knew mentally that I was going to get chances late in games that I needed to come through, because the matchup set up well for me and Uke instead of, you know, David, Manny, and Mikey. You know, it was tougher matchups for them. So that year, man, it was mentally, it was long. So once you do it, you know how hard it is. You realize it. Yes, you want to do it again, but you have to prepare to do it again. And that's what I learned from that. That first year is I took it into the off season like, man, I have to be able, because I'm a smaller guy, I have to be able to be able to start 170 games. You know what I mean? If we're going to do this, I got to be out there. And it's just, it's mentally and the wear and tear to win a World Series. That's the part, the grind that everyone talks about. And then once you do it, it's that's the ultimate, you know what I mean? You worked for it, you earned it. There's nobody ever won a World Series that didn't work for it. You know what I mean? You can't go into a season half-assed and come out and say you won the World Series. That it'll catch you. Someone outworked you.
You mentioned, Dustin, you mentioned that game down 3-1. And, you know, one of the signature moments for Ortiz was, like, you know, him, whatever, standing up and pointing to the uniform or giving the speech. Like, for you, were you like, let's go, let's go? Or was it where, like, what are you doing? Like,
which one are you talking about? Are you talking about 2013?
No. I'm talking about 2000, in that day when you're down 3-1, you have an off day. Remember this?
Oh, yeah.
And Manny's telling all the reporters, not the end of the world if we lose.
Yeah.
But didn't Ortiz like give like some sort of speech?
Oh, well, everybody talked. A lot of guys talked. A lot of the older guys talked. Shill talked. David talked. Mikey Lowell did. You know, I just sat back and listened. You know, I knew, you know, I think the first four games, I had actually hit the ball good, but I lined out a bunch. And I remember sitting in my locker thinking, if I can get on, you know, you're always trying to do what you can do to help the team get better and get out of this. And for me, I was hitting leadoff. So I knew if I got on base, we're going to win. You know what I mean? Because at that, I knew game five, if we give Josh Beckett three runs, we're winning. Mm-hmm. Like, that was it. Like, there was no in between. He was, CC was great. Josh was on another level. Like, it wasn't even close. So I just kept, you know, putting all the pressure on myself to get on base, find a way to get on base. And I think that game I hit a double, a single, and I walked. So I was on base three times. We ended up winning. And then once you get that win and you get back home, you have new life, man. It pressure's on them when you get to that game six and they're up 3-2. You know, they got to try to put us away. And when your back's against the wall, you play a little bit differently.
Well, okay, go 13 now. We know that Ortiz gives a speech in the dugout. And by the way, were you like, Mike Matheny, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing? Like, keep pitching this. Like, what is happening? You keep pitching this guy. He's hitting literally he's hitting 600. So, like, what was that? Like, he gives a speech in the dugout in St. Louis.
Well, first off, I mean, we're in the middle of the grind. I think I was coming up. So I'm like, Dave, get this over with. Like, we're still like, I got to get ready to hit. You know what I mean? No, I think he was just reiterating that you don't get many opportunities to be in this situation. You know what I mean? So we all knew that. That was a different team, man. We were not the best talent wise, but we were way better than everybody else as a team. Mentally, it was, that's the most mentally tough team I've ever been on. There was nothing that could come to any of those guys. Like, we knew we were going to win. And that's pretty impressive to say. I mean, I'm saying that from top to bottom. Everyone accepted their roles. Everybody bought into their roles. Everybody knew what was asked of them. And we did it together. That was a different bunch. But I think David said that at the right time, that, you know, we needed to go. And sure enough, we did. You know, I think that was the inning. Shoot, we got the first or they got two outs right away. And I got jammed and hit a base hit over short. And I think it was, did David walk? I think David walked, and that was the inning. Five. Johnny Gomes hit that three run home run.
Right. Yeah.
So I think David walked. Hell, I don't remember. Yeah. Or David probably got another hit. I don't remember.
Yeah.
But it was when something happened, he made something happen. And, you know, we took off from there. I don't think we lost again. You know, we were down 2-1 and we ran the table. So it was pretty special.
So
question, just because we're on the 2013 World Series,
and
because this guy is a hot topic right now, watching Xander Bogaerts in that playoff run, could you tell that, you know, there was something special with him there?
Oh yeah, yeah. But well, yeah, you could tell. I could always tell when Bogey got called up in San Francisco. You know, he was. You know, I had to get him a couple suits because he his luggage or something didn't arrive. Raquel called me. I was like, yeah, well, I got him. You know, we'll take care of him. And the way he was appreciative, the way he acted when he walked in the clubhouse, just the way we threw him in the fire, and like he was different, man. Like he and he still is. Like he nothing bothers him. Always a good at bat. Always under control. And we knew once we threw him in the playoffs, like he's fine. You know what I mean? He's not emotional. You know what I mean? He's just gonna play the game.
Always even keeled.
Yeah, he's just one of those guys you build your team around. You know what I mean? And I'm saying that talent wise and attitude wise and just his presence. You know, he's a guy that, you know, I saw walk in and I'm like, all right, here's the next, you know, Red Sox for 15 years. You know what I mean? I can tell. You know what I mean? It is what it is.
Well, okay, so you're going to Cooperstown. I'm always here for you to help you prepare for life, okay? So you're going to be asked from all the Jim Oakes like myself about David Ortiz stories, all right? Ready? Let's workshop this a little bit. Okay. So I want a good story about this, like a heart-to-heart maybe you had with him, and then your best sort of like wacky David Ortiz story.
So, I mean, guys, there's so many. I mean, I played with him. Shoot, what did I play with him? 12 years or something like that?
By the way, when you – I think it was when you retired, and he texted me the best quote of all time, something like, you know, like, I don't know, biggest nuts ever or something. But, I mean, it's – and, you know, you go back to when you started, you called him Big Pun, which, first of all, like, when you – tell me the origin of that. And also, did he like, what are you talking about? I can see like this is how it unfolded. You called him Big Pun. He's like, what do you mean? And then when you told him, he's like, ah, I love that.
No, Big Pun, short for Big Punisher.
Right.
And he was on fire at the time. So I just threw it out there. He loved it. He started laughing, you know, because Big Pun, the rapper, he was big at that time. So he just loved it. I mean, honestly, the stories, there's so many. And like I view David as family. You know, there's, you know, obviously we're completely different. You know, we come from different parts of the world where, you know, he's a huge guy, I'm small. But it's crazy how two mindsets can come together and they're basically identical. You know what I mean? And he always knew what I was thinking. It was the same way. You know, and you know, we had a lot of fun, I'll tell you that. You know, there's not one story that stands out, but there's so many memories that we went through together in that time, and man, it was a blast. It was fun. I just there's so many. I mean, I remember he jumped in the whirlpool with me at Fenway, and that was hilarious. We were making fun of we were actually getting on Larry Lucchino because we didn't have any hot and cold plunges, so. It was me in a tub that was the size of me, and me and David are in it. I don't know, have you seen the picture of it?
I was about to say, that's a picture with both. You have the goggles on, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I had a rubber ducky in there, and like, we had somebody take a picture, and I sent it to Larry Lucchino, and I'm like, Larry, we got to get hot and cold plunges. This guy's in my hot plunge. he might drown me. You know what I mean? Like, so, and sure enough, Larry was the best, man. He ended up getting us hot and cold tubs. You know, so just stuff like that, man. We had a blast the whole time, especially on the field, talking trash and just winning games, man. It was fun.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for the Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you said it very well. Congratulations. about, by the way, this is great preparation. You're welcome. Okay. For preparing you for Cooperstown. I'm making you a better person, Dustin, once again. All right. A better interviewer.
Who made you a better person? David Ortiz or Rob?
Yeah, that's a great question.
Oh God.
That's a great question. But you said it very well about like how the dynamic of that you guys are completely different, yet you could tell you were the same. Like, it, obviously you're like great, great friends. There's a reason why you're driving through the windy roads of upstate New York to see this guy get inducted, because you're great, not just because he's a teammate, because he's a great friend. But that dynamic, we're not ever going to, I hate to keep going down this road, but we're never going to see anything like it, like that, dynamic. We're just not. Like the big, huge Hall of Famer and the guy who should be in the Hall of Fame and coming from completely different worlds, completely different physical statures, everything else. So, well said. That's what I'm saying. So, congratulations.
Thanks, Rob. Yeah. I like it.
Yeah. I remember Brian Bannister told the story on Twitter about David, like how he would be up on the phone during games, you know, like he'd mastered the art of DHing. And then he'd like, hold on a second. He put the phone down. He'd go hit the home run and come back. Like,
yeah,
you witnessed that sort of stuff, right? I mean,
yeah, he did that a lot. I mean, I remember one time I had to run upstairs and go to the bathroom, and my job was tough sometimes. Like, you know, you're playing defense. I'm dealing with pitchers are pissed off about shifting guys and positioning, and I was kind of frustrated. I ran up there, and David's on the phone, you know, talking, you know, loud, and music's going on, and I'm like, God damn, man. Like, I'm like, David, what the fuck are you doing? You know what I mean? Like, I'm out here grinding, like I'm about to have a heart attack, and you're up here, you know, way going crazy. You know, I got to push this log out real quick and get back down to the grind. You know what I mean? So
was there ever like a point where like baseball, like it always ebbs and flows. Was it ever just like, God damn, like this game comes way too easy to this guy. And like, I just like, if I could just have an ounce of that.
Well, you know, it's funny. Like it didn't, he worked, man. Like it's not like he just showed up and just hit home runs. You know, he was, you know, one of the most prepared guys, you know, looked at video. You know, it wasn't like he just showed up, goofed around and hit home runs. That's not what it was. So I knew that, you know, when you're rolling and you're going good, you don't even have to think about baseball. And I think that's the special part about it, is when you're on fire, everything's easy. You know what I mean? So I caught him at a time where he was on fire and he was having fun and he just rolled down and get a hit. You know what I mean? But yeah, man, he's one of a kind. There's no one there. There's no one going to be like him again. You know, that's for sure.
So go ahead, Coop.
So I'm not sure. Did you watch the Last Dance documentary at all when everyone had an opportunity to do, like, binge everything during the pandemic? Yeah. So one of the big themes of that was just like Michael Jordan was such a competitor, and like, he just couldn't really always understand that other people couldn't go to his level.
Yeah.
Was David Ortiz like, was he like that at all, where like he just kind of expected everyone to perform the way he did? Or was there kind of a better understanding and like an like leadership wise, where he's bringing everyone in? And
well, I think, to really not to interrupt, but I think that you guys are probably both that way, Dustin, right?
Yeah. I mean, listen, me and David weren't demand. We were, I think so. David offensively, he was very, this is where I think we were so good together, is offensively David demanded a lot with preparation. So if you weren't preparing, he would get on you. Defensively, if our infielders or outfielders were going through the motions, let's say in spring training or, you know, in base running stuff or anything like that, I would get on you, because my job was to do the little things. And if we weren't preparing to get ready for the journey, that's my responsibility. You know what I mean? Yeah, you have coaches and you have, you know, whatever, but, you know, as a part of getting our bunt defenses done, our first and thirds, and taking pride in that, because in 2013 we won games in Detroit on ball in the dirt reads at home plate, Mike Napoli, and you better bet your ass that we went through the proper way to execute that in spring training, and I made sure of that. So I think we didn't demand results, We demanded work. And I think, and I think you have to have that. And that, and it's great when you have, it worked out because he's a DH and he could, I couldn't do both. I'll be honest with you. I couldn't go into the batting cage and, you know, tell guys to work. I couldn't do that. But when you're, when I'm on the field and I'm the leader of the defense out there, yeah, I could do that. You know what I mean? And then you needed a pitcher that was going to lead them. And we had Lester, we had Lackey, you know, we had guys that were ready to take care of that aspect. So you got to have that. Like if you're putting together a team, like we got the blueprint of it. We, you just saw it. You know what I mean? You need guys that can lead and hold each other accountable within the clubhouse that makes your team go. And we had that.
Man, Coop, you are you all right? What was the heart rate,
I'm fired up
you're
right now.
You're ready to go through a wall.
Well, no, just like thinking about like that 2017 wagon of a team. Like they were just going to roll through. And then you bringing up that 2013 team and just like thinking about like all the small ball things that you guys did perfectly. Not to say that one championship is more memorable than the other, because I'm sure that, you know, they're like children. Like you can't pick out a favorite. But like as a fan watching that 2013 team, it was so much fun because it was just the very little details that you guys always got right.
Yep. Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah. All right. You ever been
that was me geeking out there.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah. I would have loved to see you back in the day, Coop walk into the locker room of you just wearing them. But the thing is, the great thing about it is that you would wear the guys out. It would be like sort of the gauntlet, and then you get through it, and then you're like, okay, now you've passed the test.
Yeah. Coop. Yeah, they're good.
Yeah, Coop, you would have passed the test.
Oh, I'm glad I would have.
You ever been to Cooperstown? I don't even know.
No, I have not.
No, you haven't. Okay. No. Ever. Ooh, look at you. No.
I'm making my first trip as well. I feel like with the name Cooper, I should have been already, right. But
yeah. One of you deserve to be in the Hall of Fame. I'm not going to say which one. all right. So Dustin, what do you got? What do you got on the docket here? We'll let you go. You've been very generous with your time. Other than driving through the windy roads of Cooper, upstate New York. I know you're coaching your kids. What's the plan? What's going on?
Well, shoot, I just sent off my oldest to junior high for the first day today, and my two little guys, fourth grade and third grade. So, I coach my little. Next year will be 11U and 9U baseball teams in the spring. We don't play in the fall. Like we do the tournament baseball, but we will not do it year round. It's I don't youth baseball right now is a mess. And then they switch. They go multiple sports. So they're all doing basketball. Or my older two are doing basketball right now. My little guy's going to be doing club soccer. Yeah, man, just being a dad and enjoying it. You know, I'll talk to ASU every now and then. I'll go talk to Willie. Bloomquist is the head guy there now. You know, I still in touch with all of our guys with the Red Sox. You know, nothing like official title or anything like that. But I'm sure I'll start doing something for them soon. You know, maybe working with some young infielders or something like that. But, you know, I don't want to dig deep into it until my youngest is out of the house and goes to college. So I got about 9 years of golfing and helping out any way I can to society. So I'm enjoying it, though, man. It's fun. You know, I thought I was going to have a hard time, you know, and I do every now and then. The other night, you know, I watched that Jeter thing. And I'm like, man, I miss playing. So I got a cage in my house. I went in the cage for a little bit and was hitting missiles. So that's the problem I have.
Still got it.
After I got done hitting, I'm like, it's a damn shame because now that I got my partial replacement and I can do everything now except run. So if I could run, I'd probably be leading the league in hitting. So it pisses me off.
I love it.
Real quick question. Would you rather field a bucket of balls or hit a bucket of balls? You can only do one.
Wow.
What a question by you, Coop.
It kind of depends on how I'm hitting. If I'm not getting any hits, neither are they. you know what I mean?
But here's the biggest takeaway from what you just said. Derek Jeter documentary, Driving Dustin Pedroia to Comeback. Like, let's go.
No. Hey, if you give me your leg and I could run, you'd see it.
I would give you my leg. You still wouldn't be able to run. So
I'll be honest. You can take both.
That's a good point. With that carcass you're rolling with, you can't do anything.
Well, you did introduce the line, what's up? It's like, what's up, your cholesterol? Yes,
yeah.
Coop, last thing. Coop basically works for smiles and t-shirts. Here's your chance, Coop. Favorite Dustin Pedroia memory?
Oh, very easy. This is like non-field highlight. When you were injured, I believe ankle.
Oh, I broke my foot.
Foot, that's right. Yeah. And I remember seeing, what year was that?
Just 2010. Like,
2010. So I would have been about 13 years old, just to put this into perspective. I remember seeing and like hearing that like you would be out on the field either in a chair or like putting a pad down for your knee and just like taking like reps. And I remember hearing that and just being like, I want to be that. Like to absolutely love the game that much where you're just like, you can't be separated from it. It's like that made me gravitate towards you. And like, again, me nerding out and just being like an ultimate fanboy right now. But like, that's how I grew to like appreciate this game and just be like a grinder. So
right on,
congrats on being like an amazing guy.
Thanks. I'm still pissed at the doctor after that one. The guy told me, so I broke the worst bone in your foot you could break with that foul ball, right? And the guy goes, hey, you got to be in this cast for about 6 weeks, and then you take it off, and we'll know if it heals. So I'm like, all right, 6 weeks, like, I'll be back. You know what I mean? I got a chance. So literally, I was hitting in a chair, like, taking ground balls, and I was good. And then I got the cast off, and I'm like, I think I can do it. So I go on a rehab assignment. I would go, like, 0-for-8. You know, I didn't even get a ground ball. First game back. Base hit up the middle, steal second, goes into center. I go to third. The next day, I couldn't walk. So it was like, it didn't heal. You know what I mean? And it was like that. I one of my regrets, I don't have many, but one of the regrets was the 2010 team, man. We were really good. And injuries, I think, you know, Tech and Victor Martinez got hurt. I got hurt. I think that was the year Els got hurt. You know, but if we were healthy, there is no doubt we were going to be in there in the end.
By the way, the screw from your foot is in the New England Sports Museum.
Yeah, I gave you that, right?
You did. Yes. Yeah. I could have sold it, but instead I gave it to the people. So there you go. All right. All right. Well, we'll see you in a couple of days. But Dustin, thanks, man. I appreciate you catching up.
You got it, guys. Have fun, okay?
Great meeting you.
All right.
Take care, Coop. All right. All right. See you guys.
See it. See it.